This GCN program brought to you by Frederick Remington, Fully Cooked Bacon, the thickest, meatiest, center-cut bacon in the industry. Available at FullyCookedBacon.com. That's FullyCookedBacon.com.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do it. Bill Martinez Live, a program about current events, our culture, our values, our politics, and our future. And now, Bill Martinez.
You better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. Stop, hey, what's that sound?
So, is all this focus on Russia threatening to delay congressional action on tax reform into next year? Here's Chief Congressional Correspondent Mike Emanuel.
President Trump, Vice President Pence, and Budget Director Mick Mulvaney met today ahead of the rollout of the 2018 budget next Tuesday. It's expected to include more money for troops, weapons, and border security. It's likely to include reductions for environmental protection, foreign aid, and poverty programs. Congress is also trying to jumpstart another major item on the agenda, tax reform. Speaker Paul Ryan is rejecting any suggestion it could slip to next year.
Our goal, and I feel very confident we can meet this goal, is calendar year 2017 for tax reform. And I think we're making good progress.
The House Ways and Means Committee held what its leaders described as a major tax reform hearing on Thursday with this call to action.
America now has one of the most costly, unfair, and uncompetitive tax systems in the world. The need for pro-growth tax reform is urgent.
The panel's top Democrat agreed the tax code is broken and is not working for both families and businesses, but isn't willing to just go along.
We will oppose any tax plan that simply helps the rich get richer and does nothing for those who really need our help. The Trump tax plan currently fails to meet this standard.
The top Democrat in the House criticized the GOP for not being unified on a plan.
We look forward to that discussion, but so far what we've seen is something that adds $5.5 trillion to the deficit as it gives tax breaks to the high end. Their trickle down has never worked, but let's go to the table with something. But they can't even come to agreement among themselves.
Ryan said lawmakers are figuring it out.
We're going through the process of looking at what is the best way to reform the tax code and to lower tax rates for businesses and to make the American tax system internationally competitive. Right now, it is literally one of the worst tax systems in the industrialized world.
While Ryan's talking this year, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's talked about getting it done this Congress. That means by the end of next year. But with 2018 being an election year, that puts a lot of pressure on action in 2017.
Well, no doubt, you know, it's easy to say the system is broken. It's the worst. We know the reality of it. Trump, which I appreciate, every time he meets with his key people, the question is, how are we doing with jobs? How are we doing with the economy? I mean, the focus clearly is on getting America back to work again, because that is the foundation of getting this country at a point to where it can realize its greatness once again. I tell you, it makes me sad to hear Nancy Pelosi and some of the Democrats talk. I mean, this opposition, I mean, here's the time for them to address their ideas. You know, what is their idea about how to make it better? I mean, they had 8 years where, you know, they had control of the bully pulpit. And what we did was double the debt. And, you know, she talks about, well, we're going to add five more trillion, you know, to the debt. You know, it's like, okay, but what are your ideas not to add 5 trillion? What are your ideas to come up with a concept of, you know, the size and scope of government? What is the government that we should be affording here based on GDP, you know, based on the success of the people, not the other way around? We cannot force it from the top down. And that's what Democrats continue to do. They build plans in order to get reelected. That's their motivation. It's not, and I would say that's empirical evidence when you look at the pattern of their policies. Okay, but give me policies that, you know, that's fine that you have the desire, you know, to want to help people, but don't do it at the expense of others. And this is when we get to, you know, we start dealing with that compassion issue, right? Because once you're compassionate to one group, then you become discompassionate to another group. The government's not in the business of compassion. That's not their job. But that's what the Democrats would want us to believe, and this is what has got us into the mess that we are in right now. That is not government's responsibility. But let me say to you that if you don't get activated and involved and let your voice be heard, then we just hear the voices of Nancy Pelosi and others that are not serving the greater interest and the greater good and what and in what promotes the United States of America. I'm Bill Martinez. It's 5 after the top of the hour.
Hi, this is Sophie Winnick, longtime distributor and user of Longevity products. In the last few years, my family went through a crisis. Everything else in my life, including my business, had to be put on the back burner. Thankfully, life is getting back to normal now. But the one thing I never had to worry about was my business and my monthly commission. I've been a distributor for Longevity for over 17 years, since before it was Longevity. And I've got to say, the most amazing thing about this company is the people. While my family was in crisis, other distributors stepped in and helped my customers, simply because that's what Longevity people do, even for people they don't know. For me, it has never been about getting rich. It was about a product I could stand behind, a company I could count on, and a monthly commission check that has never, not once, been late in 17 years. Longevity is truly a business for everyone, even people who have too much to do. I'm Sophie Winnick. I'm just like you. I have a real life, real ups and downs, but I know I will always have Longevity.
Getting America back on track. Bill Martinez live.
Welcome back, America. 6 minutes after the top of the hour. We'll remind you, for more information on the show, you can go to BillMartinezLive.com and figure out how to connect with any one of the 280-plus affiliates we have around this great country of ours or around the world via shortwave. And I encourage you to, if you so are inclined, let us hear from you. We love to hear from you, good, bad, indifferent. Get involved in the conversation. Bill at BillMartinezLive.com. You know, at times... In our faith walk, there are times when, you know, you hit those roadblocks and you wonder, you go, hey, do I really believe what I've been saying that I believe? And I believe that, if I could say that, all people of faith come to that moment, come to that crossroads. And I got to tell you, when it happened to me, I welcomed it. I mean, it was a bit disconcerting, because it put to test all the things that I knew and had learned by rote, being raised by Catholics. So you being raised Catholic, and especially I give the nuns a lot of credit for that. I just so honor and respect them because of what they contributed to my life. But sometimes you have to get to that point where you own the very words that you are saying. Our next guest is a professor, Gary Habermas, who earned his PhD from Michigan State University, a distinguished research professor and chair of the philosophy department at Liberty University. And this is a little bit of his story, and this is our opportunity to see how it relates to you. Professor Habermas, welcome to Bill Martinez Live. How are you?
With you. This is a special occasion.
Well, it is. I think any time we can talk about our faith walk, because it encourages others, Professor, to realize that we're not in this alone. I mean, regardless of degree and stature or accomplishment in life, what is most important is the settled issue of Jesus Christ and our relationship with God.
Exactly. Especially when there's good data for it that most people don't know anything about.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't say that any kind of looking down my nose sort of thing. It's just what I mean is it's programs like yours, and I mean, you know, who's gonna sit there and have you say to them, oh, hey, look, here's a 600-page book. You can start working on this right now. Overlook the big words, by the way.
Right.
You know, and no one's gonna sit down. But if you can tell them quickly and outline something, you might spur some interest, and that's why I think it's a great opportunity.
Well, and again, this is something that's universal, where we get to that point in our walk with God, or maybe our non-walk with God, but we come to that crossroads where we have to make a choice. And for you, it caused you to really, you know, look into the resurrection of Jesus. As many others have said, if I can disprove, even Lee Strobel, which they just did a movie on, and basically his premise was, hey, look, if I can disprove that Jesus, did not rise from the dead, well, then that, that kills Christianity, doesn't it?
Yeah, the line of the movie was fantastic. Didn't it go something like, if the resurrection fails, the whole story's a house of cards?
Exactly.
It was very well said.
Well, and so this has been the question through the millennia that keeps getting asked, keeps getting challenged, and time and again, whether it's Josh McDowell, whether it's Lee Strobel, yourself, others who have gone through this exercise. And like you say, it's not that you're looking down your nose, it's just you did the hard work. You said, okay, and God says, draw close to me, and I'll draw near to you, ask the questions, and I'll give you the answers. And right? And sometimes we just have to do the hard work.
But in this case, the approach I take to the resurrection, and I've developed it in my dissertation. I did my dissertation on the resurrection at Michigan State, and I'd have to go back and count, but half the scholars on my committee didn't believe it, but they just said, I mean, the director of my program at that time basically said to me, look, we're liberal here, but we're good liberals. We don't tell you what you can believe and what you can't believe. You can defend it. You got it. So defend it. Go for it. And that's what I try to do. But the good news is that, to me, the approach I use, it's not me. I mean, don't hear that little two-letter word, but it's easily explained. It's not hard to grasp. It's very, very simple. I have actually spoken to, in different scenarios, to second graders, and more recently to 10-year-olds and to 14-year-olds doing this. And you can do it and not lose them at all. So,
yeah,
it's amazing material.
You addressed the minimal. I mean, first of all, congratulations that you would be so bold to go before those professors at Michigan State University, the good liberals, as they describe themselves.
Yeah, and they were. They were very fair.
Yeah, and to bring this case before them. And, of course, they approved of your defense and, assigned you the Ph.D. designation.
Yes, they did. The most complimentary person on my committee was an historian in the history department, and he was a non-Christian.
Mm-hmm.
So, but he was, he just said, hey, you're good to go. I'm all right with this.
Wow.
And, you know, that you just want fairness. That's all you ask for.
Mm-hmm. But here you are as a man of faith, and you're presenting this case in a not so, you know, I mean, understandably, an adversarial environment, but you got to know that if you can get people to appreciate the effort and the argument, then it goes a long way. And you know, it's hard to rebut the truth, isn't it?
It is. I just had a discussion with the fellow before you called today, and we were talking about somebody who's very well known who's a very well-known critic, and he just went after one of my statements. And all you ask, like I said, is fairness.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if the guy knew he was doing it or didn't know he was doing it, but the guy who tried to explain away something I had said was going after this little tiny periphery point that's not even my argument. But if people who don't understand the argument or don't listen, they're not going to pick up the 600-page book. They're going to hear someone else characterize it. And it's easy to, you know, dismiss something when you don't even have the idea that you're dismissing.
Exactly.
You know, and it's just, as I said, just look at the data and tell me what you think about it. And it's difficult.
As my son has been telling me in all his 26 years of wisdom, he says, Dad, they're just losing their blessing. And, you know, when he said that, I go, whoa, that's pretty deep, kid. I appreciate that. I'm going to write that on my wall here. Because I think that's what happens is that, God gave us a blessing and a curse. It's the road that you choose to go on. And, as Joshua said, for me and my family, we will serve the Lord. He chose the blessing. And that's our prayer as we continue to have this discussion with Professor Habermas. Stay with us. We're talking about the case for the resurrection of Jesus. We come back, and then we're going to address the minimal facts buttressing the truth of the resurrection. So stay with us. I'm Bill Martinez. It's just about 15 minutes after the top of the hour. We've got more from the good professor right after this.
Uncertain times, it makes sense to have a sustainable backup method to cook food and boil water. If your current plan includes using a fuel-burning stove or cooking over an open fire, then there's a much better way. The Minuteman Rocket Stove is a biomass-burning cooking stove that only requires small quantities of sticks and twigs for fuel. The Minuteman Stove is easy to use, smokeless, portable, powerful, and sustainable. For the finest in survival cooking stoves and fire starters made right here in the USA, go to MinutemanStove.com. That's MinutemanStove.com.
Think about this. Your community's aging water infrastructure systems are very likely to be contaminated with heavy metals like lead, disinfection chemicals like ammonia, chlorine and chloramines, and pharmaceuticals like statins, pain meds, and antidepressants.
And no, water treatment plants are not equipped to filter these pharmaceutical toxins out.
Protect your family's water supply with the trusted Big Berkey water filter. New NSF EPA certified lab tests show Big Berkey water filters remove chloramines, pharmaceuticals, BPA, pesticides, bacteria, and viruses, all forms of fluoride, and much more. Big Berkey water filters are the original and most trusted on the market, the gold standard in water purification. And our filters last for years at less than 2 cents per gallon. Big Berkey, the one powerful enough to purify stagnant pond water. Get your Big Berkey today. Call 1-877-99-BERKEY or click BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. That's 1-877-99-BERKEY. Big Berkey water filters for the love of clean water.
Fully cooked, ready-to-eat bacon. I'm talking thick, meaty, center-cut, presidential bacon. Savory and delicious. I buy some, I use some, I store some. Awesome. No refrigeration needed with a 10-year shelf life. NASA pack technology. Bacon. Fully cooked, fully hydrated, ready-to-eat right from the pack bacon. Or warm and served. Life-saving, ready-to-eat bacon. 10-year shelf life bacon. Ships free at fullycookedbacon.com. Fullycookedbacon.com.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. I'm here to tell you about GCNTelecare.com, a team of board-certified doctors assisting you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Within 15 minutes of registration, care your family can afford. Revolutionizing the healthcare industry, virtual consulting providing diagnosis of non-emergency medical issues by phone or secure video on computer or smart mobile devices. GCNTelecare.com, virtual care anywhere.
Extendivite really works. Just listen to what some people have to say.
Several years ago, I was developing a very severe situation. I called it my flippy heart. It just was doing not good things. And I did not want to go to a medical doctor because I just knew they would give me a cover-up pill. I didn't want to get onto that sort of thing at all. When I learned it was garlic and cayenne, and cayenne is a healer. It is a wonderful herb. I said, I think I'm onto something here. I'll tell you, I wouldn't be without it. It did wonderful things for me.
Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid. Call now. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Be prepared for the next disaster with the Shelter Pod. The Shelter Pod is a large, all-season, heavy-duty, quick-deploy shelter. The Shelter Pod system can be set up in 30 seconds and includes an emergency medical kit, water filter, survival tools, and more. Are you prepared to take care of your family? Do you have everything in one place ready to go? Get it now or enter to win a complete Shelter Pod system at shelterpod.com. The Shelter Pod at shelterpod.com. Shelter when you need it most.
The country, on your smartphone, and around the world. You've tuned in to Bill Martinez Live.
And you're all the better for it. Welcome back, America. 19 after the top of the hour. I'm Bill Martinez as we come to you fresh every day, Monday through Friday, 9 to noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific. Our conversation continues with Professor Gary Habermas, who got his PhD from the Michigan State University. And neat story, as he shared with us in the first segment, a distinguished research professor and chair of philosophy department at Liberty University. By the way, congratulations to the graduating class at Liberty. Also, you know, to the leadership there at Liberty University and their importance, their stress on the importance of the Constitution, Professor. I really appreciate what the university has been doing on that behalf.
Thank you, Dave. I can't take much credit for that myself, but the school, mm-hmm. the administration, they've done a fantastic job. We graduated thousands of students. Mm-hmm. The school's gotten very large, and you know, people appreciate it. So
exactly,
that's good news.
Well, again, we thank you because it has become a bastion of conservative thought and you know, religious thought as well. You know, and freedom and liberty, the things that we've unfortunately in the latter part of this current generation we've taken for granted. And you know, it's tough. I see myself fighting these days. Not so much for myself, but for my kids and for my grandkids because of the trajectory that I see this country heading into right now. But getting back to the case for the resurrection of Jesus that you wrote about, you say there's minimal facts buttressing the truth of the resurrection. Address those, if you would.
Sure. What I started doing way back in my dissertation, and I've simplified it much today to present popularly groups. In fact, I just returned from the UK. I go over there every year to lecture in a number of their key schools and give the same message. But basically what I did was I argued that there are some probably a dozen facts minimum that are recognized as historical across the board mm-hmm. by scholars. Now, when I say across the board, these people do not have to be the people who are doing the recognizing. They don't have to be people of faith. They are very frequently atheists, agnostics, liberals, non-Christians of various sorts. It's amazing how many people are professors of New Testament around the world and they're not Christians.
I know, amazing,
and they don't believe the Bible is the word of God, but that's their field.
Well, that's the reason where we have like a lot of people that don't believe in Jesus, and they sing Christmas carols. So go figure, you know. Yeah, right. Okay, so we know that.
Sure. So, so what I did was I started realizing that a couple of these, like I said, about a dozen of these facts are just readily admitted by everybody. And I wondered, now, why are they admitted? And sometimes some of the strongest statements in their favor are made by atheist professors, agnostics. I'll tell you what, about 2 years ago now, I had a live dialogue in studio in London with an agnostic professor of New Testament, and we had a discussion on these facts. And the question was, do scholars really admit these things?
Mm-hmm.
All right, the fellow's in the right field, New Testament. He's an agnostic. And the talk show host started out and said, hey, Gary, give us a list of the facts you're going to use. And I cut the list down from 12 to 6, which is usually about the number I use.
Mm-hmm.
And I finished just saying this one, this one, this one, this one. And he turned to the agnostic and he said, where are you on these? Is Gary right about this? Or are they acknowledged? And the fellow said, yep. He said, every one of those is allowed. And the moderator said, okay, well, let's move on. And the fellow said, can I just add one more thing? And the guy said, sure. And the agnostic professor said, I just want to note, he said, these facts aren't just true that Gary's mentioning. He says they're the best attested data in the New Testament. Now, the comeback from a lot of people is, you're using the New Testament. Well, I mean, that's no more significant than if I were, this is not true, but if, mm-hmm. but if I were doing an MA in history and my master's thesis is the factual foundation of Homer's Iliad. I mean, I can take a book, and I'm not assuming Homer's inspired or of God or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And they go, well, that's poetry, or that's this, or that's that. It doesn't mean I can't find data in there.
Right.
And people do that all the time. We deal with people who are not great sources, and we look for the truth there. Well, so I use these six facts, And I argue that they're allowed by everybody. Now, the key to this argument is not that they're allowed by everybody. The key is, why are they allowed by everybody? And they are because they're basically irrefutable. They mm-hmm. are because each one has maybe 5 to 10 arguments, separate arguments in his favor. And so the critical community just says, yeah, you can use them. Go ahead. And here's my thesis in a sentence. Using only this approximately half dozen list of facts, I can argue, I think successfully, but I can argue that the resurrection of Jesus is the most likely explanation of what the facts indicate, using only facts that people across the board, you have to be a specialist, you have to know the field, but I don't care if you're a believer or not, I don't care if you're, how liberal you are, you have to be a specialist, just don't sit down over coffee and start pontificating, tell me what the facts are, you know, but my point is, I'll take just those six, and the conclusion is that the resurrection is by far the best explanation for what we know from the history of that period.
Exactly. Well, for me, I was profoundly touched when I, considered your third fact that you addressed, and we'll come to that in just a moment. But for our audience sake, because they're going to go, okay, tell me the facts. Give me the facts. Give me the six facts.
Yep.
So go
yep.
ahead. Lay it out.
Okay, the six I would use, I would say, number one, Jesus died by crucifixion. And I could sit here and name, because I do this for a living, I could name the most skeptical guys in the world who say that fact it's of the crucifixion is utterly unquestioned, that Jesus died by crucifixion. Right. Secondly, his followers, I word this very carefully, his followers had experiences, real experiences, that they believed were appearances of the risen Jesus. Simple as that. They believed they saw the risen Jesus.
Right.
Thirdly, their lives
something like 500
right
people, like five, you know, just taking the evidence from the New Testament, there were
that
500
is,
right accounts.
Yeah, so that there's 500 people once that is given in the earliest. By the way, it's another fact that this material is reported very, very early. Because someone's going to say, "Oh, that's in the Gospels," and it's decades later. First of all, decades in the ancient world is, 40 years for Mark,
right.
It's not bad. But that actually is in a report that a critic such as a fellow who calls himself an agnostic leaning toward atheism, the skeptic Bart Ehrman at North University of North Carolina, he says that that report dates back to about a year after the cross.
Wow.
So, I mean, 40 years is fine for the Gospel of Mark. That's fine in the ancient world or anywhere. But but really, 1 year after the cross? So a third fact is that this material is given very, very early. The people who believed they saw Jesus were so transformed that they died for it. Now, somebody always stops me and says, just look around the world. Just look at the news last night in England. Mm-hmm. All you have to do is have a political cause or religious cause, they're the two most common ones, that you really believe in, and you can be willing to die for it. That's right, but that's not my point.
Mm-hmm.
My point is, in religious factors, people who die for their faith die for evidence that somebody else gave, usually centuries ago.
Mm-hmm.
The disciples were in a unique situation because the resurrection is the center of Christianity. That's undisputed. Center of Christianity is what we call the gospel. And to die for the gospel back in the first century meant, if you were one of the disciples, meant you died because you really believed you saw Jesus. You died
right.
because you were sure you
exactly.
saw him.
Well, Gary, we're running out of time. We got about 30
okay.
seconds left, so we got to hit the other three
right.
really fast, okay? Go ahead.
Okay, well, Paul and James, two skeptics. Paul and James, the brother of Jesus, skeptics before they met the risen Jesus. How do we account for their faith when they had no faith ahead of time? So they saw something. They said the risen Jesus appeared to them. And I think they count specially because they were unbelievers
right.
and people who knew what they were talking about.
Wow. Well, this is an incredible accounting, like he says, Professor Habermas, these are indisputable. They're one that people will immediately agree on. Not a whole lot of argument, but it is the case for the resurrection of Jesus. Professor Habermas has been our guest. Gary, thank you so much. Appreciate the insight. Look forward to having you back again as we continue this conversation, okay?
This report is brought to you by Cochlear. Baby boomers are suffering from hearing loss in record numbers across the United States, but many let their condition go untreated.
Approximately one-third of Americans between ages 65 and 74, and nearly half of those over age 75, experience hearing loss, but nearly 70% do not use a hearing aid. Additionally, nearly 2 million Americans could be candidates for cochlear implant technology, but only 5% of those who could benefit from it have been treated. Dr. Daniel Zeitler is a neurotologist and skull-based surgeon at Virginia Mason Medical Center.
Many baby boomers are experiencing hearing loss that could be treated with cochlear implant technology, the only proven technology for those with hearing loss in the severe to profound range. Medicare, most insurance plans, and often Medicaid cover cochlear implants. It's so important that anyone with hearing loss talk to their doctor about the treatment options that may be available to improve and maintain their quality of life.
For more information, visit cochlear.com/US.
Message and data rates may apply.
When did American men get so soft? Today's average red-blooded American man has less testosterone than his father, and his father has less testosterone than his father. Before we turn into a country of powder puffs, Force Factor is launching the Man Up America event. We want to send every man in America a complimentary bottle of the breakout supplement taking GNC by storm. Test X 180 Ignite, loaded with free testosterone-boosting manliness. Get your complimentary bottle by texting ACTIVE55 to 369-369. During workouts, Test X 180 Ignite raises levels of free testosterone in your body to help build lean muscle. Plus, it helps burn fat, fuel sexual desire, and improve performance. Now you can continue to feel like the real men that made this country great. Do yourself a favor. Do America a favor. Text ACTIVE55 to 369-369 for your complimentary bottle. That's a complimentary bottle by texting ACTIVE55 to 369-369.
Attention business owners and independent contractors. This is a money-saving message from Tax Mediation Services. If your business owes $20,000 or more in taxes, we can help you today, right now. Listen, dealing with the IRS is no picnic. It's an intimidating and extremely stressful process, and you don't want to go it alone. Our attorneys know every law, every tax break, and every possible opportunity to help you resolve and reduce your tax debt. And if you owe more than $20,000, you may be at the top of their hit list. So don't take your tax debt lightly, because it will not go away on its own. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, your home, and even shut down your business. Call our tax experts today at 1-800-765-9681 and let us deal with the IRS while you focus on your business. That's 1-800-765-9681. Again, that's 800-765-9681.
For more information and the interviews you love, go to BillMartinezLive.com.
Hey, just one of the many places you can connect anywhere. We've got 280-plus affiliates around the country, around the world via shortwave. We welcome you all to Bill Martinez Live. Andrea Lucado was with us. I know you hear the name Lucado. You're right. She's the daughter of best-selling author and pastor Max Lucado, one of my favorite authors. I love reading his books, and you're going to love hearing from Andrea, and you're going to love reading her books as well. She inherited an obsession with words and their arrangement, has a master's degree in English Lit from Oxford Brookes University, and contributes regularly to online and print publications such as Relevant Magazine, and She Reads Truth. Andrea, welcome to Bill Martinez Live. How are you?
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm doing great.
Hey, wonderful to have you here. You're based out of Austin, Texas. I was just in Austin over the weekend, the home of Zydeco Music and all that good fun. But, oh, my goodness, I hadn't been there in about 5-6 years, and I needed therapy with the freeway system that you have there.
I do, too. I'm in the area, and I've definitely been introduced to it on a daily basis.
Hey, people tell me, you know, I grew up in Southern California. They go, oh, Los Angeles traffic. Now, I mean, you know, and I used to, when I used to go there, I have a dear friend there. I have several friends, and that's one of and one was a business, some business friends that I was visiting with and meeting with. And they always talked about Austin being continually under construction with their freeway system. And here it is. I mean, I couldn't recognize the area. And it's only been 5 years since I've been back there. But and the GPS could not keep you going straight. And one guy explained to me, and which gave me some comfort, because he says, yeah, it just can't keep up with it. Because at one point it had us going on the 30. I know you'll appreciate this. Had us going on the 35, exiting to go on a frontage road, only to get back on the 35. I mean,
it does that all the time.
Just for fun, huh?
Off and back on, and off and back on.
I mean, here we are.
It is a nightmare.
Well, we're talking Austin just for fun, but this her book, I'll tell you, is something for you to consider as a, you know, just in terms of, you know, one of these kind of legacy books. And it's amazing because you're so young but yet so wise, Andrea. Your father rubbed off on you very well. English Lessons, The Crooked Path of Growing Toward Faith. Summarize it, if you would, for us.
Sure. So English Lessons is really about a year that I spent overseas doing the master's at Oxford Brookes in Oxford, England. Mm-hmm. And it turned out to be a year I knew that I was going there to get a master's degree. I knew that I would travel some while I was there, being so close to the continent. I did not know that I was going to struggle so much in my faith the year that I lived there. And so it's really a series of stories about struggles in my faith. I ask a lot of questions in the book. I don't necessarily answer all of those questions, which I know can really bug people. I still don't have some of the answers to those, but I think if I wanted to write something that would sort of give people permission to ask the questions that they have about their faith and to not cover them up or be ashamed, but to know that they're not alone in that question asking journey.
Well, there's something about going on, and as we would say, some of us who have been there and done it and bought the T-shirt, Andrea, that there's something special about a desert experience. And by desert, it doesn't necessarily need to be an actual desert, but it's more of a spiritual exercise where you're away from the comforts of home and those things that defined you as an individual, and it's just you and yourself and maybe God, you know, where you, and for you, you chose God and you addressed the number one question. It's the number one question that everybody has. I mean, in seminars that I've done and teachings and everything else, the number one question is, who am I?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. It's a continuous kind of journey. And I don't think, especially if you're a Christ follower, you can't answer that without knowing who God is too. I mean, those two things just go hand in hand. So I feel like I was asking kind of both of those questions at once. Who am I? Who is God? What does he have to do with me? You know, it's just kind of that young 20s kind of self-centered questions that you ask but have to at some point in your life.
Well, and what you said was really, you know, profound and simple, and that is that you have to connect with the Creator to really know who you are. I mean, when you think about Peter, for example, in the confrontation, a bit of a confrontation that he had with Jesus, it wasn't really much, but it was just a contact when Jesus asked him, says, who do they say I am? And, you know, Jesus just threw that out there. And they all came out with different ideas, if you remember. But it was Peter who said, no, you know, you're the Christ. You know, you are the Savior of the world, essentially. And Jesus knew at that moment that was something that didn't come within Peter. Peter didn't have the capacity to understand it. That was God-given. And
yeah. And
what Jesus did, he blessed him in because Peter was able to acknowledge and speak forth what he knew about Jesus. And Jesus said, basically, is because you told me who I am, let me tell you who you are. So to your point, if you want to know who you are, it's the one who created us who has the answer. So we have to go to him, right?
Right. Yeah. If he's at your core, you know, if Jesus is really your identity, then yeah, you aren't going to know who you are until you kind of acknowledge who Jesus is. And it kind of takes the pressure off of really having to figure yourself out, I think, mm-hmm. when you think, well, this is really not so much about me as it is about my relationship with my Savior. So,
exactly.
Yeah, I like using Peter in that.
Right. And then why, I mean, after all, I mean, I remind people all the time, it's not like God created us for an experiment.
Right.
You know, it wasn't a thought, it was an idea. Well, I think I'm going to create Andrea here because this is the kind of thing I think I'd want her to do. God doesn't operate that way. I mean, everything is always specific. This is what I love about God. I mean, even when he takes Moses up on the mountain, he goes, okay, write this down. I'm going to give you everything that you need to know about how to build the temple and all the sacrifices and, you know, how you're supposed to approach me and everything. I mean, everything was every detail. There was nothing left for interpretation, was there?
Right. Yeah. And all of it is somehow going to bring glory to him. I mean, any part of our story and the Israelite story and ours as, you know, as the Christ followers, the point is to be pointing back to him at all times and moments. And that's a hard thing to remember, I think. I get really caught up in my day to day and I don't necessarily ask what's glorifying God, what's not. But yeah, if you look at your story and if you look at God's faithfulness, the point is to point others to him so that they would know him.
And for you, because of the experiences that you have enjoyed, and these are your personal experiences, this is your personal story, whether it's life in the Lucado family, being around a celebrated father that you grew up with, or leaving your comfort zone to go to England for a year, these are your stories, and along the way, I'm sure you're seeing God in those stories when you have those, as I call them, the Salem moments that the Bible refers to. You know, after it gives you something profound, you see the words Selah, and you just have to pause. It's kind of a landmark, a time, maybe a you're coming to this beautiful oversight, you know, just pull off the road for a moment and take a good view, just take it all in, right?
Right, yeah, and it was, the process of writing the book was really cool because I feel like I was able to pick out those Selah moments and kind of each chapter is one of those moments. And it's stuff you're not usually aware is happening in the moment. There are maybe a couple of really profound moments with God that I was aware of when it was happening. But a lot of it was sort of reading through journals, looking at old pictures, going through those memories and seeing, oh, God was doing something here and he was doing something here and he was doing something here. And in the moment, I couldn't realize it or appreciate it, but now it's something that I'll go back to forever as a mark of God's faithfulness and the fact that he did see everything that was happening and he knew.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I like the titles of your chapters, Field Crickets, The Babel Effect, My Front Light, The Atheist Society, Faith of Our Fathers, A Spoon in My Tea, The Road More Travel, If I Forget You, O Jerusalem, English Gardens, and so on. When we come back, we're going to go a little bit deeper into your book, English Lessons, The Crooked Faith of Growing Toward Faith. Andrea Lucado is with us. More from Andrea after this. Stay with us, America.
Hey there. Did you know that with a bachelor's degree, on average, you could make almost twice as much over a lifetime than a person with just a high school diploma? It's true. According to the 2012 U.S. Census Bureau, college grads with a bachelor's degree make almost twice as much as high school grads. Now, going back to school is easier than ever at Independence University. Log on and complete coursework from the park or the beach or even your couch watching the kids. And Independence University gives you the tools, a free tablet and laptop for undergrad students to use and keep when they graduate. That's right. Get a laptop so you can go to college from anywhere. Take the first step to a new career in business, information technology, healthcare, or graphic arts. Call to find the online degree program that's right for you, and you could be on your way to increasing your earning potential.
800-981-9347. 800-981-9347. That's 800-981-9347.
The experts at Web.com want to build your business a successful website for free, just like we did for these current Web.com customers.
We've used and looked at other website designers, but there's nobody better than Web.com.
Web.com can build your website in as little as 7 days free. Plus, we'll promote it on all the major search engines like Google, Yahoo, and Bing. If after 30 days you're happy, we'll continue to provide promotion, hosting, support, and maintenance, all for one low monthly fee. If not, cancel and pay nothing.
If you're in business today and you don't have a web presence, you won't be taken seriously.
Call right now and you'll also get a free .com or .net domain name for your new website powered by VeriSign, the world's leading domain name provider.
Call 800-765-1480 or go to web.com/radio.
That's 800-765-1480.
No upfront charge for site build, after which ongoing fees apply. Rights to site are relinquished when canceled. Domain included during active service, after which fees apply.
This is Dan Pilla. Do you owe the IRS money you can't pay? Are tax debts crippling you? I've defended people from the IRS for over 30 years. I've helped thousands, and I can help you too. I wrote the book on IRS settlement, and I'm telling you, there's no such thing as a hopeless case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX to finally get free of IRS debt. With the IRS's new programs, there's never been a better time to solve your problem. Call 800-34-NO-TAX. That's 800-34-NO-TAX or my website, danpilla.com.
Hi there, I'm Bob Eubanks. You know, as part of Hollywood for a long time, I've seen my fair share of celebrities get in trouble with the IRS. Well, there's one name I trust, the Tax Defense Group. They're the most trusted name in tax. So if you owe more than $10,000 to the IRS, you really need to call my friends at the Tax Defense Group. Ignoring the IRS is not the solution. They can garnish your paycheck, levy your bank accounts, seize your home or business. But the Tax Defense Group could put a stop to all of that and tailor a program that would reduce your tax debt to pennies on the dollar. You gotta love that. So don't just take my word for it. Call them. Find out for yourself. They offer a 100% satisfaction guarantee. And they're open 24 hours a day because they know that tax debt doesn't sleep either.
Call now for your free and confidential tax analysis from the most trusted name in tax. Call 800-361-6907. 800-361-6907.
We use cell phones against our heads every day. But now, a landmark U.S. government study confirms increased health risks from exposure to EMF radiation emitted from these devices. The time to protect yourself is now. The solution is Defender Shield. Proudly made in the USA, Defender Shield blocks virtually 100% of EMF radiation emitted from cell phones, tablets, and laptops. Buy now at DefenderShield.com. Use discount code DEFENDER for 10% off. DefenderShield.com, the worldwide leader in EMF radiation protection.
It's about time someone had the courage to say it. Neil Martinez, live.
We're back with the America, 14 minutes before the top of the hour. This news in this morning that Sir Roger Moore, James Bond, the actor who played James Bond seven times on the big screen, passed at the age of 89. Also, the Manchester bomber has been named the suicide attacker ID'd as ISIS calls monster soldier of caliphate. And we're talking right now with Andrea Lucado about her new book, English Lessons, The Crooked Faith of Growing Toward Faith. She earned her master's in England. Andrea, I'm sure when you heard about what happened at the Ariana Grande concert at the conclusion of it last night, it had to be heartening for you.
Oh, it's just a tragedy. I was just watching the news really, really in awe. And it's one of those things that's very hard to process. Manchester is in North England, and I didn't get to spend time there when I was in the UK, but it's been, I've seen some really, out of the tragedy, some beautiful stories coming out. By the way, the community has just surrounded the people and supported them and opened their doors and homes and kitchens to those who were affected and those who are grieving. So my thoughts and prayers are with those families, especially when it's an attack on the youth. I mean, there's something especially evil about that, and so especially difficult for families. So yeah, it's really heavy news.
So many young kids. The second victim, an 8-year-old. I was heartbroken thinking of those parents that couldn't find their kids. I mean, this is shades and memories of 9/11 once again. You know, people looking for family members. Quite tragic, to say the least. But they have identified, as I mentioned, the suspect. Salman Abedi is his name, is what British authorities have done. And, of course, they will continue to investigate. And we will continue our conversation with you, Andrea Lucado, on your new book. As we were saying here, I love the titles, and I imagine as you, maybe when you read, when you go back and you read this book as an author, does it kind of at times give you an out of body experience where you go, gosh, I wrote that. That's pretty good.
Well, probably more often the opposite. Like,
where was the publisher on this? Where was Dad? Dad should have told me not to put this in there, right?
Yeah. There's been a lot of second guessing. Lots of second guessing happens once a book is out there in the world. But no, I'm happy with how it turned out. And, you know, I'm like, well, this is a story that I needed to tell at the time. And I know I'll have another story to tell later on down the road. But there are actually illustrations for each chapter, little sketches at the beginning of each chapter that sort of represent the main theme of that chapter. And I really love that. I mean, I'm not a visually artistic person, but I appreciate the visual art. So that was a really neat little feature that they added to the book that I liked.
Well, I think you said, you know, when you shared with us, when we first started talking about, here you are, I mean, basically you're a PK, right? You're a preacher's kid.
Right.
And the church is all you knew as a kid growing up. And I thought it was interesting that you wrote that you went to England to meet God, that somehow you felt like the God that you had known all your life, there was something more.
Yeah, that, you know, it is, because as a PK, you're surrounded by God, people talking about God, scripture. But there was something about, I needed to know, okay, is God the same over here as he was back home when I was in the Bible Belt and surrounded by Christians and surrounded by people who believed in this message? What is it like to believe in God in a different culture, in a different place, in a place that I'm unfamiliar with? And so I spent a lot of time on the River Thames that year. I lived just a couple blocks from it. And looking back, you know, I think that was sort of my constant and kind of ended up being a metaphor for God in my life that year. Just this constant that I knew was there. I didn't necessarily hear him all the time or see him all the time, but I was walking beside, it's sort of like I was walking beside him and he was present, whether I was aware of his presence or not.
Exactly. Well, you tackled the first question, who am I? But then the second thing, a little bit which transitions into what we're talking about right now, is what do I really believe? What seemed to hang you up there with that big question?
So my big question was, would I still be a Christian if I hadn't been raised in a Christian home? And for the first time, I was spending a lot of time with people who had not been raised in a Christian home, who were not cultural Christians, even, you know, people who went just because it was what you did in your town, or I was really hanging out with agnostics and atheists and getting to know them and realizing, well, they weren't raised the same way I was. Of course they don't believe in this. You know, they've been raised to believe in something opposite. So that was a big question for me. But yeah, it's still something that I think about. It's something I've kind of accepted, but I understand when people ask that. It's important.
Now, were you you had to be in connection with your parents. Are you sharing with them that, you know, here you are, you're hanging around agnostics? I say hanging, you know, but you know what I mean. And they're aware that, boy, you're on a journey of discovery, right?
Right. So it's interesting you ask that, because I did a reading of the book for some, for my alma mater, and my mom was there and my mom's friend was there, and she came up and asked me and my mom afterwards, were you aware, Dina Lynn, that Andrea was going through all of this? And my mom and I looked at each other and we were like, you know, I don't think I talked to my parents very much about it that year. I think I talked to my mom regularly because I was really stressed out about school and she was constantly talking me off the ledge, quitting and that sort of thing. But I think it was a journey I was sort of going through just on my own and maybe with a couple of friends that I had in Oxford. But it was kind of something I needed to do without my parents. I talked to my parents a lot about doubt in high school because it was sort of something I struggled with then. But that year was more, we couldn't talk as much, period. But I think it was more of a personal me and God journey I had to do.
It's almost like you had to go into the cocoon. Just to kind of hibernate with your own thoughts, your And I guess that in of itself, I mean, when it's just you encased in a cocoon, your thoughts in dealing with, okay, who is Andrea? What is she about? What's her story? And, you know, like I say, what do I really believe? So
right.
For you coming out of that cocoon like a butterfly, what was the final conclusion, or is that conclusion still being written?
Well, in some ways it is still being written, but I would say, you know, my struggle then was really about the basics of faith. Do I believe in God? How can I know? Do I believe in the divinity of Christ? How can I know? Those are not questions that I have now as far as faith goes. So I do feel like those were really solidified. And I went to a Christian conference while I was in Oxford. It was a conference in London, and it was about art. So it was a bunch of Christian artists who had gathered. And I remember having sort of a turning point when I got home from that conference. Something sort of clicked for me. I felt like I had been living in this darkness, and I suddenly, through some conversations about the role of faith in art, was able to see that, you know, darkness is not necessary, doesn't necessarily mean God isn't there. I mean, darkness can be something that really makes the light shine even brighter. And
right.
So I think that started to click with me. We read the If I Forget You, O Jerusalem, Psalm 137, listened to a talk on that. So that was halfway through the year, like exactly 6 months, I think, through the year. And that is something that really stuck with me. And I think things started turning around faith-wise for me at that point.
Yeah. Were you frustrated because you know, here it is, you're this Christian, you're this PK, you're supposed to be this expert in Christianity and all the other assumptions that go with that. We seem to apply more pressure to ourselves than we should. And you're there with agnostics and people, maybe part of you are thinking, they really need to know the message. Am I ill-equipped to give them this message? Because maybe I just don't, you know, because I really don't know if I really believe this or how to articulate it to them. I mean, did any of that come into the process of your thinking?
Yes. Oh, constantly. I was constantly sort of battling, okay, I need to be a good Christian witness. I need to evangelize. I need to do these things. Yet, I don't feel like it. I don't have the fire in me. I'm sort of just clinging onto my faith. I'm not necessarily holding on to it and grasping it and truly believing it. And so I called myself a very lousy evangelist when I was in Oxford. And by the end of the year, I was able to have a couple of conversations with some friends where I was honest about what I believed and was able to ask them some questions. It still wasn't, you know, this let's open our Bibles together and really talk about it, but it was a big step for me at the time. So yeah, I don't know that I left a huge evangelistic mark on Oxford. I was very, you know, there was a lot of shame about my faith. I was quiet about it. And a part of that is personality. You know, some people are made to just shout it from the rooftops and stand on the street corners. And some people just want to have coffee with individuals. And that's definitely more me. But I think I would be less ashamed now, a little bit bolder than I was then.
Right. Well, what we appreciate is God gives us seasons of life, and who you are and what you will be, and the destiny that you're on has been determined by him. He says he knows he knows the end from the beginning. So it's all set out by the maker, the one who loves us no matter what. And your book available at all the usual places, right, Andrea?
Right. Uh-huh. Barnes & Noble, Amazon. Yeah.
Congratulations on the book, English Lessons, The Crooked Path of Growing Toward Faith, a very honest insight into Andrea Luceta. Andrea, thank you so much for being with us.
Hi, John here again. After another month of being on several supplements from Synergistic Nutrition, including Synergy One, the Andrea's Black Cumin Seed Oil, and other supplements, I've lost another 10 pounds for a total of 20 pounds. My belt size has been reduced by 1 3/4 inches. My knees don't ache as much anymore, and I'm walking my dogs twice as long as I did a month ago. I sleep very well and have a lot more energy. I noticed that when I cut myself accidentally, that I was bleeding much more profusely and that the blood was bright red. Previously, I didn't believe much of alcohol. It was dark red in color. So I know this protocol is working to keep my blood healthy. Additionally, I now have the energy to do calisthenics several times a week, in addition to the extra walking. My hunger has been reduced a lot. I take 2 shakes a day, one with each meal.
Call Synergistic Nutrition at 888-988-3325 or visit sacredseedoils.com. That's sacredseedoils.com.
Anytime.